Welcome to the Why We Build podcast. Join Steve Wheeler and our host, Greg Waller, to explore the world of remodeling. Whether you're on the production team, design team, or managing the whole show, you can expect insights, tips, and stories that inspire and educate. So let's dive into the Why We Build podcast.
What if every employee in your company thought like a business owner? What if they didn't just show up for a paycheck, but took ownership of the work, the challenges, and the outcomes? Imagine a team that doesn't just follow orders, but actively seeks ways to improve, innovate, and drive success. Not just for themselves, but for the entire company. Today, we're diving into a concept that goes beyond the traditional idea of profit sharing. It's not just about splitting the financial rewards. It's about creating a culture where every team member is invested in the bigger picture, where employees don't just work in the business, but on it as well. It's about shifting mindsets, fostering accountability, and unlocking a level of engagement that transforms companies from the inside out. If you've ever wondered how to get your team to think, care, and act like owners, this episode is for you. We're exploring a framework designed to bridge the gap between leadership and employees, aligning goals and driving long-term success. So before we dive in, my favorite Eagles fan, Steve Wheeler, please introduce our guest.
Quite an introduction. All right. So Rob Gallagher has spent the last 10 years building businesses and empowering the people who make them thrive. As the CEO of Gallagher Co., Hotshot Restoration, Extreme Express Car Wash, and One Hour Drain, Bob has learned that true success lies in fostering a strong work culture and sharing the rewards with the people who make it all possible. Bob has dedicated himself to perfecting a profit-sharing method that fuels both company growth and employee satisfaction. Welcome to the show, Bob. Rob.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Greg. That was quite the introduction, Greg. I'm impressed. I think I might write that down.
I can send you a copy if you like, but it's, truly thank you for being with us. Mentioned to you off air. I have read the book. I think it's an excellent concept. Before we jump into that, tell us a little more about you, your businesses. I know you have a lot of them and you have a really excellent history. It is in the book, by the way, if you want to learn more about Rob's upbringing and how he got to where he is, definitely read the book.
Yeah, I was the oldest of 11 children, and teamwork and working together was a big part of my childhood. And I learned at a very early age that working together with my siblings, and those of us that have siblings, we know that that is not always the case. And it is definitely a challenge and something worth that takes effort to do. But I learned at a young age that working together reaps bigger rewards. And as a young man, I got into the trades, and I found myself in some leadership roles. I think I was about 21 years old, very young in the trades, and I was leading men that were older than I was. And so I've always had a knack for this, a general knack for leading and figuring out ways to get jobs done faster, to create unity and get everyone to work together on projects, you know, all the way down to painting a bedroom to building, doing huge remodels and huge construction projects. But all across the board, I saw a lot of benefit in creating that unity and teamwork to do these things. So when I lost that job during the 2008 housing recession and I had to start my own business, it was not really a goal or something that was hot on my mind every day. I basically did it out of necessity, but it was something that I pursued early on in those days. And I was really trying to just avoid the typical rat race that business owners find themselves in, you know, the 80-hour work weeks, the missing their kids' games, they're not spending enough time on their marriage. They're letting their bodies and their mental health go. They're not taking care of themselves because everything is going into this business, and every ounce of their energy, every thought that they have, everything in their whole mind, body, and soul is going to this business. Well, I found myself there about 3 years into my own business. And I thought, you know, I was successful. I was making money and growing, and it was exciting, and I was having a blast doing it. But looking back, And I was 24, 25 years old. And I was like, man, I see where this is headed really, really fast. Like, I look like I was probably 10 years older than I really was. And, I remember one day someone is like, well, you're about 35, right? And I'm like, oh man, this is a bad sign. What's going on with my life? I need to fix that. And so I started educating myself on running a business, and I started talking to older, much more experienced business owners about this problem and some of the other problems that I was having. And I wasn't getting a lot of information. These business owners were living that life and they were doing that. And it kind of scared me. And they made money, and they had nice homes and nice things. They had all those things, but they didn't seem happy. They didn't talk about how great the vacation was with their wife or the relationship that they had with their kids. And I was determined to figure out a better way. And so I started reading books, and I got a lot of traction from that. And I came across this concept of profit sharing from Dave Ramsey's book, Entree Leadership, which is basically just a business op playbook. So he didn't go into details of anything, but he kind of breaks down all the different parts of being a business owner. But this idea of profit sharing fascinated me. And the theory sounds great. There's a lot of information out there on the theory. I have no problem today Googling or going on the podcast apps and searching the words profit sharing, and there's a decent amount of people talking about it. But I didn't get or find, and even 10 years ago, any concrete nuts and bolts spreadsheets or how-tos, that really had details about how to do it. And I'd never found anything, but I was determined to learn more about it. So I started doing it. I was like, I'm going to figure this out. I got two of my leaders together in my office one day and rounded around the table. And I'm like, this is my idea. I don't know how it works or how it looks, but I want to try it. And we did. We sat down and we started talking numbers. We printed out all the P&Ls. At that time, I had two companies. We printed out both P&Ls. And like, well, how much can we share? How does this work? How much should we share? How much can we share? All those things. So that conversation started in 2010 or 2014. And in 2015, we cut our first profit sharing checks. And I did not get the results I wanted that I thought I was going to get. I did it very poorly. I made so many mistakes for 3 to 4 years working on it, and I getting it better and better every time, and learning to do it better, and learning what mistakes I was making and fixing those. But 5 years go by, and we figure it out, and we stumble on some things that we were doing wrong, and we make those changes, and we start seeing traction, and we start seeing it work. And all these theories that these guys were talking about, I was seeing those results. And that was exhilarating for one. And it still wasn't perfect. But 2019, 18, 19, to present day, we've made some improvements, and it's just gotten better and better and better and creating more and more traction. And it's, the proof is in the pudding. We've had growth, we've had net profit growth. I've been able to expand into other areas in the company and invest in our people. And it's been a beautiful thing to see, and extremely rewarding, not just financially, but the freedom of time that I have. I have 8 children, and that's a lot of time as a father, and I want to be a good father. And this allows me profit sharing. I truly believe profit sharing has allowed me to be a good dad and a good husband, and it gives me the time to work on those things and be aware of those things when I'm at home. So that's basically the, in a nutshell, the background and how we got to today.
So, we often hear the term profit sharing. It's rigid, it's only about money. And it seems to me that you've really evolved this into a cultural thing within your company. I want to get in the nuts and bolts, but I also want to know how the culture part came to be. Let's start there. And then I have some questions about in the beginning where you said we made some mistakes. I'd like to hear what those mistakes are
Yeah,
and how we
absolutely.
got through that.
So the culture part of it. So one of the things you hear about, and this is especially prevalent in the corporation, corporations of America, is the quarterly bonus, right? We've all heard that, or the Christmas bonuses, right? The once a year influx of cash to your team. And I'm not against those. Those aren't bad things, but I do believe that they do not drive the results that the owner of the company or the company that's giving them out that they truly want. And they could be doing it in a better way that would be more efficient for the company. They would actually get more results from their team, and the team actually would benefit financially and in their personal day-to-day lives better if they profit shared on a monthly basis, per se, which is what I teach about, is that it must be monthly. And when you are, the culture part of it is when you affect your team members' monthly financial needle, right? Nobody talks about how much their landscaper costs per quarter. Nobody talks about their cell phone bill on an annual basis, right? Everything we do is monthly. All our bills are monthly. Our grocery budget is usually written out monthly. Everything we plan on, when we think about a car, we don't even think about the cost of the car anymore. We think about the monthly cost of that car, right? So when you're paying someone quarterly, you're not affecting their daily life. You're not affecting the bills that they have this month. And when you're not doing that, then you're not affecting their daily activities. So when you tie the profit sharing financial reward for their hard work into their daily life directly, that's where the culture really gets 10x'd and really ties that connection together. And your team members' minds, they go, well, mama wants to go to, Cancun next month, and that's going to cost $3,000 or whatever that is. I can make that up and it not affect us financially by profit sharing with my company. I know what it takes to win. I know what the company needs to do to make profit sharing, and then I get a piece of that, and they're motivated, and that affects their daily life. Just as one small example. So that's how the profit sharing has really come into the culture of these things. And another thing for the culture and the business owner benefit is I don't feel like I'm working with a bunch of employees. I'm not even a big fan of that word. We call them team members here. It actually says employees in my handbook because the state of California law says I have to use that word. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. Freedom of speech. But anyway, another topic. So are you and then you feel like you're working with peers. These people have the same interests you do, the company being successful. You don't have to make every decision because they want the same thing that you do. Micromanaging has almost virtually been eliminated from my daily life as a leader in the company, except for some new people. There's some more managing there and training there. But my leaders that have been here, I don't have to double check on them or follow through with things on them because they have the same interests I do. They're already thinking about these things. And a lot of times they're thinking about them better than I am. What was your second question, Greg?
It was really when we get, maybe we can hold off on that till we get to more of the nuts and bolts of it. But I'm thinking again, Steve and I like to talk a lot about mindset and those sorts of things around it. And one of my questions is how long did it take, or how did you get to the point where employees really understood that this was not a carrot or a tactic or a ploy, but they truly have value to your company in a very collaborative way.
I think the leadership has a big part of this. To do profit sharing right, you have to be a good leader, a good strong leader. I'm not saying you have to be an elite or one of the best or have all these years of experience, but you need to be aware of some things. And it's one of the rules of profit sharing that's in the book about you tying in the profit sharing directly ties into the results of their work that they do. And that creates this ownership mindset that really, like you said in the introduction, is the number one complaint in some form or another, may not be the same words every business owner has, is nobody thinks, cares, or works like I do. I mean, how many times have you heard that? You're smiling because, I mean, it's like any business owner, that's their thought every single day. This really bridges that gap. Because an owner gets paid only when there's profit. The owner can't get paid if there's no profit in the business. So when you tie that concept, that idea, that thought process, that mindset with your team, it creates so much unity and everyone's going the same direction. It's extremely powerful.
So I'm going to use a phrase that Steve likes to use. It's blocking and tackling. So how is it, like, what is the nuts and bolts of this? How is someone going to launch a program like this? Maybe their company's been established a long time and it would be a completely foreign concept to their team.
Right. So there's three things you need to have in place to even consider profit sharing. Number one, you need a business that makes money and operates well. And I'll just go through this real quick. You know, I have business owners that come to me, they don't even have core values and a core purpose or a mission statement set up. You know, so there's some business ops basics that they need to have dialed in. They need to have KRAs or KPIs, whatever word you want to use, for their team members and for their departments. They need to have goals. They need to have some goal setting skills. They need to have these really basic things that every business should have to be, you know, a well-ran, profitable company. That's number one. Number two, you need leadership. And that could just be you, the business owner. And that's not a small thing. I think a lot of people talk about it. They breeze over and they say, yeah, well, I'm a leader. They listen to me when I talk. Well, they listen to you because you signed their check. But are you really leading your team? Are you an example? Are you someone they look up to? Do they have respect of you? You know, are you running around every weekend, traveling to Vegas, doing things that you shouldn't be doing, blowing the company's profits and not being an example as a father or a spouse or just a good person in general? So leadership is the second thing that you need. The third thing that you need is accurate accounting that you understand. A lot of businesses, especially in the remodeling space, you see great tradesmen that have some sales skills start a business. And they can build anything they want or fix anything they want. And they can do some sales, but they have no idea about accounting. And it's a huge point of failure for these small companies. And I see it all the time. Phenomenal tradesmen, hardworking, good leaders, got some sales, you understand marketing, but then they don't even have the financial information to know where to steer the ship because they don't know which direction the wind's blowing. And so those are the three things that you need to have in place before you can even consider a profit sharing plan. Now, the profit sharing, the nuts and bolts, there's 10 rules that I've come up with. And all these are rules because I've made these mistakes. And there are 10 things that I always look at when we edit or fine tune our current profit sharing plans. We always make sure that's within these rules. And if you like, I'll go through those really quick too.
Yeah.
So number one, this is a big one. Profit sharing has to be paid out monthly. And the reason for that is their reward needs to tie into their monthly financial needle, which ties into their daily activities. If you're not paying out monthly, you're not changing their daily thoughts, which changes their daily activities. And to move the needle in the company and to get the production, the best production out of somebody, it has to be their daily thoughts and daily activities. You know, for example, you have a project manager that's driving out to a customer's house. It's 20 minutes away. He's going to do an estimate. He's in the car and he's listening to the radio. That radio is not helping him. He's not learning anything. He's zoning out. You know, he could be listening to a podcast about sales or estimating or listening to an audiobook or making a phone call to a customer, following up on an old bid. You know, those little minutes throughout the day that they can do to really increase their value in the marketplace is important. And paying out profit sharing monthly makes that connection with them. Rule number two, make it substantial. You know, one of the mistakes I made was profit sharing checks for $300. It doesn't change their life. It doesn't change their day. They might go to lunch that day and have a really nice lunch or dinner, but you didn't help pay the rent. You didn't, you might have covered a cell phone bill, but you didn't help make a car payment. So we've learned that a minimal of $1,000, a 4-digit number at the minimal, actually makes a difference in people's lives on a monthly basis. Depending on where you live, that could be their rent. It definitely, for a small family or a single person, could be their grocery budget for that whole month, right? So it has to be substantial enough to actually change their financial needle. Number three, this is another mistake business owners make, and myself. It needs to be obtainable. lot of business owners are like, well, I earn everything. I built this place. I'm here every freaking day, 12 hours a day. If I'm going to share some of these rewards, it's going to be worth it. And then they double their existing profit margins as the threshold to share some, which is, and then, but they don't even hire it. Add team members. They don't even train their team on what it takes to get there. They just expect to throw this carrot out there and everyone's going to figure it out on their own. And it's going to be this magical plan. It doesn't work that way. So it is set up though, where if you set up your profit sharing correctly, it doesn't cost the owner any additional money to do it. And the only upside, it's a win-win situation. The only time you're going to pay it out, which you want to pay it out every month, is that you actually made more money excuse me, that you did the year before. So that's rule number four. It has to be attainable. And I go in the book a little bit about how to do that. Number four, must be clear. Clarity must be involved. Your team must understand the idea and the results that you're looking for and how it's going to change their life and what they're going to get. This is where a business owner has asked me the question, like, well, do I need to share my P&L? And I think every business owner has a different idea on that. I can just share what I've done for myself personally, and what I've seen other people do is I share it with some of my top end leaders because they help put them together for one, and then they help look at them for errors and mistakes and make sure that they're accurate and they're responsible for those. So not everyone on my profit sharing plans physically sees the P&L. And there's a couple of reasons for that, and we can get into that more later if you guys want to. But there needs to be some point of clarity to your team about what you're trying to do, a general idea of where the numbers are at, and how what we got to do to get to it. Number five.
Is it clear to them? I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Is it clear to them that they know what impact they have on the numbers? That's something that's often missed in a bonus situation.
Right. Because, you know, I got this bonus, but what did I do to earn it? Right. So that goes back to the business op, the KRAs, and you as the leader writing out that roadmap to what they need to do to win. And depending on the size of your company and all the numbers and revenue, but they need to know what kind of percentage maybe we need to increase revenue, what kind of percentages you need to keep your gross profit at to cover the overhead to get to this net profit number. They need to have some understanding of a P&L. Do they need to see your P&L and all the exact numbers and where the money's going and how much everyone makes and which customers are spending the money with? You know, do they need to know all that? No, they don't need to know all that. That's not going to help their job. It probably creates more confusion than anything. But they do need to have an understanding of, okay, if we do $800,000 of revenue at our normal 40% gross profit, then we're going to get profit sharing. And we've already done that. You know, last year, that was our average. So if we can increase that by 5% on the top line, maybe get 1% out of the GP, then we're going to get profit sharing because those numbers are all going to add up and be more profit for the company. Some kind of clarity around that. And I can get into more exactly what I do that I think works and then what others have done that works for them. And it depends on your team. It depends on the business owner himself, what he's comfortable of sharing or what he thinks is appropriate to share. And there's all kinds of opinions on this all across the board. That leads to the rule number five is coaching and leadership.
Did you have something on this?
No, I did. This is just a question around, you know, I think you've touched on a few things about, you know, my main questions were around, you know, the new labor or the new sweeper, you know, somebody that may in the large kind of org chart may not affect things that much, but just giving them an understanding of how they affect net profit or how they can better affect net profit. But, you know, in an employee standpoint, you know, from what I've read and many things, a lot of the drivers are around appreciation, recognition, autonomy, growth opportunities. And then like sixth or seventh on the list is around money. You know, the driver being financial compensation. How does you know, the drive of money help kind of coat, you know, the profit sharing? How are the other things dealt with of autonomy, appreciation, growth opportunities, and so forth?
That's a great question. And this goes back to the first three things that you need is you need to be a good leader and a good business. And part of being a good leader and having leadership and being able to coach your team members are all those things you're talking about. You know, I talk about in the book, you need to pay a fair market wage, even if you have a profit sharing plan. A profit sharing plan is not to make up the salary of your team, your leaders, to become a competitive market. This is something that is that last 30% to create unity and to create your team thinking like you and creating this bond of we're all on this same ship together and we're all going to row this direction, right? And if you don't have that, even if you're a good leader and even if you have your KPIs and stuff, even if you have your core values, you're going to get different opinions. You're going to get people rowing this way and rowing that way. But when you have profit sharing, you tie that together with a financial incentive, it's extremely powerful. Not only, and I have individuals that are like, I'm just not motivated that way. Like my bills are paid. But what it does is a lot of people are motivated that way. Even though they may not come out in surveys, when your team that you work with, let's say you have someone that's not financially motivated, but they're on a team of five people and the other four are, they're going to catch that fever. They're going to feel their team members' excitement and they're going to want to help them because that what makes them feel good about working here, helping others. You know, maybe that's what drives them. So I've noticed that profit sharing, you know, I know that, you know, a lot of people are like, well, the money's good. I need the money too, but I also want to have fun at work and I want to like my boss and I want to have a friend that's a coworker and I want to chat with her all day long, you know, and at breaks and stuff and get work done and feel productive and feel good when I leave home. And that's all good. Profit sharing, actually, it extenuates all those things. So if you have a good culture already, you're going to have a better culture. If you have a good team, you're going to make them a better team. You know, if you have great sales, it's going to go up. I've seen it's been pretty, the results have been pretty wild of things that I didn't even think that were going to happen has happened and continues to happen. And I love hearing the stories of, you know, I'll ask one of my leaders every, you know, and be like, what do you think profit sharing changed last week? And I'll get a story about how a carpenter fixed a saw instead of buying a new one. You know, he ripped the cord and most typical employees would just, I need a new saw, boss. It's $300. Actually, I was able to fix this cord with a new cord that cost $22 and it's safe and OSHA allows it and we're good to go. You know, you're getting that across the board. So the answer to your question is it doesn't replace culture. It doesn't replace good leadership. It doesn't replace having a good business operations going. It doesn't replace having a bad accounting department. It takes the sins and the graces that you have and expands them. So hopefully you have the good graces and a good operations, and it's going to make it a great one. Does that answer your question, Steve?
No, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I love, because one of the things that we do, you know, when companies first come to us, I mean, financials are the number one thing that we want to go after, right? And the barometer we use is the term answer and defend. We want to be able to look at your P&L and balance sheet and ask you any question on any line, and you should be able to answer and defend those numbers. So, you know, and that's on a very basic level. But, you know, the budgeting obviously is the most important, that you're budgeting the proper amount of net profit to begin with. Because obviously profit sharing needs profits. That's probably the biggest fuel, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have any barometers like that you say, like, this is what it looks like to have your financials in order. This is what leadership looks like. This is the amount of KPIs or how the operation should look before going into this. Because, you know, I could imagine that companies are eager to get started, and you really do not want to rev that engine on profit sharing unless, you know, those first three elements are
correct,
kind of baked.
Yeah. Well, I'll go over some common things I see that business owners, and you'd be surprised how many out there don't even know this. So they get a P&L from their QuickBooks and they look at the bottom number, right? Let's just say it's 20,000, and they think they have $20,000 in the bank. $20,000 to spend. Well, you don't. You'll need some, save some money for growth. If you're operating a good business, you're going to grow and you need to have money to pay for that the next month, yeah, right? So And when I did it, I had historical data. I didn't do it the first year in business. So typically, this would not be the your first year in business plan. Typically, you have data and you can kind of go back and look at what your growth is. Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? So that will help dictate you how much money you need to save for growth. Another thing a lot of business owners don't know is that when you buy a truck for your plumber and you get a loan on that truck, the interest on that loan is on your P&L and you see that cost being deducted from your profits, but the principal payment is not on that P&L. So if you're making $20,000 a month and you have on your P&L and you have five trucks with $1,000 a month payment on each of them, there's a good possibility that a couple of $1,000s of those payments are not hitting your P&L. So that's when I talk about they need to understand their P&L and their balance sheet and have a good, so you need to have good accounting that's accurate first, but I also an understanding of what those numbers are. And I made this mistake. I'd see the P&L. I wouldn't even look at a balance sheet for probably the first 3 years of owning a business. I didn't know what it meant. It was checks and balances and assets and liabilities. And I'm just looking for that bottom number of what I can spend and what I can save to invest. And if I can buy that a new equipment that I need, or if I can hire this person that I want to hire to help grow this department or whatever I was trying to do. And that I learned that lesson the hard way a couple of times. And so having that understanding of those, of the accounting, is extremely important to help you know if profit sharing is ready.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that will tell you if you're ready is you have your mission statement, you have your core purpose, and you're reading leadership books. I think business owners need to be in this state of, I call, relentless pursuit of self-education. If you run a business and you haven't been to a business conference of some sort in the last 12 months, what are you doing? Right? You need to be getting better, because what's going to happen is you're going to be the ceiling of your organization before you know it. And this has probably happened to me personally 3 times. And it is a stark realization where my team is outgrowing me and they're getting better. And maybe because of my leadership or some of my ideas, but now I am stalling out and your rock star performers are going to leave you because they're going to hit a ceiling and your company's going to hit a ceiling financially where you can't afford to pay them anymore, but they're worth it. So there's a couple of things. So I think business owners in general, they know, you have a sense, okay, my business is making money consistently. I'm working on it and in it. I'm educating myself. I'm educating my team. I'm coaching my team. We're getting better, right? Revenue's going up. The marketplace is telling us that we're successful and that we're getting improving on ourselves. I think that, business owners need to be educating themselves about the accounting constantly and developing leaders and then having that profit there consistently too is a huge part of it.
Definitely big advocates for education within our company. Now, I don't want to skip over any of the 10 rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But what I want to get to, so 5 is coaching and leadership. We've talked a lot about leadership. We all know how important that is. 6 is reminders. Number 7 is my absolute favorite on here. I think it's probably the most generous thing that you can do as a business owner. Can you tell us more about that one?
Yeah, I'll tell you my story about this. So when I was employed in the commercial retail space, you know, I had a good job. I had a company truck. I had a laptop. And I had a cell phone. And I made more money than I ever have in my life. And I was broke. And that financial stress at home, it you know, as persons, we have these wheels of life, you call, and there's all these sections of our life, spiritual and financial and work and personal and our marriage and social circles. We can't separate who we are from this location to the next location. That person goes with us everywhere. And so a broke, stressed out team member is a less productive team member in your building. And even though your building had nothing to do with that stress or financial issues in the first place, they're getting a fair market wage for their value in the marketplace. And so I found that, and I went through a Dave Ramsey financial peace program. when I lost my house, and it really changed my life and straightened out my understanding of money and how this works and budgets and all the importance of this stuff and discipline. And it made me a better employee and it made me a better business owner. And I found that teaching others that makes the whole building better. And so I also found it, even though I was already doing it, while, you know, before the profit sharing was really successful, I found that the profit sharing probably made it even more important because now I have team members, some getting checks for $2,500 a month. And for someone that makes, you know, 80K a year, 60K a year, that's a big deal. And then they were blowing it, which is fine. I mean, it's their money, right? But, you know, a year goes by and they want a raise. And I'm like, you made $20,000 more than you could have made anywhere else doing what you're doing. And you have no results of that. Let me help you. You know, I want you to win here, right? I want to make money off, you know, from work with you. And I want you to make your money, but I want you to win in life too, man. I want you to be successful and think about your retirement and think about investments and think about all these things, get out of debt. And some of my best people are debt free. Because they don't have that stress. They don't have that those issues at home dragging them to work, and they need that next paycheck, and they're just like kind of a zombie going through life because it's of the stress and the issues. And as soon as they get that paycheck, it's like, hurry up and spend it before it's gone. And I can say these things because this is me. This, you know, I've done all these things. And so I just took the value that I got out of a program like that, and I offer that to my team. And he doesn't have to be Dave Ramsey's. There's tons of them out there. Dave Ramsey is a big name in the space, and he's just happened to be the one that I used. But it's not always about profit sharing. That this rule, it just helps your team handle that and creates a better team. You know, it could be part of the better business ops and culture question too. But it's important to me, and that's why it's one of the rules.
I think it's, like I said, it's my favorite rule on the list.
Great.
So let's pick it up at number 8.
Okay. Protecting the mothership. So this number 8 and number 9 can kind of go together. I think the idea of protecting the mothership is crucial for everyone's success. So it's not just about the business owner or just about the guy digging the ditch or the guy running the field. It's about everyone's thinking like we're going to save this ship. So what I see is that teams, you know, you have a team of 10 guys and one of them is going through a divorce. He started drinking or he's drinking too much again. And I found that the team members are not going to bash him or try to get him off the team, but they're going to bring it up because he's hurting the success of the ship, right? He's not rowing the right direction. And they can go to the leader, and the leader is going to try to help that individual through this process of hey, you know, what's going on at home, man? You need some time off. You know, what do you need? What can we help you do that? You need to get off early on these days. Like, we got your back, but we need you to hold yourself together so that we can continue to win together. And this stuff, it needs to be communicated. When somebody... You know, I had somebody here, this just happened this last year, they, you know, the quiet quitting, and he was a pretty big leader. He was actually been with me for 10 years and he quiet quit. He had something going on at home and we noticed some performance issues and some numbers dropping here and there. And we didn't, you know, so the conversation started happening, no changes being made. And then he was gone. He quit. We didn't fire him. We were trying to turn him around. But then I find out that people in the office knew he was going to leave. And so then there was a huge discussion about, hey, that's not protecting the mothership. If we would have known that this guy was going that way earlier, sooner, your profit check would have been bigger those 3 months, you know? So it kind of creates this unified, everyone's thinking like the owner is, we got to protect the ship to keep people engaged. For the whole, kind of look at the whole picture. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
That's just one example of it. Number 9, protecting the cash flow. This is where the accounting thing comes in. You need to understand really what your P&L says and how much cash cash on hand you're actually making. Just because your P&L says you made $20,000 in January, it doesn't mean you're going to have $20,000 more in your bank account come February 1st, especially if you're a contractor who is billing on net 30 terms. You know, I get a lot of that question from contractors. You know, one of my businesses is a car wash. We get paid before we even wash the car. We profit share the next month, right? There's no cash flow issue there. If we make money, you get your money. In the construction, plumbing, any other business where you're billing a client, like I know CPAs typically bill a client, you need to have some kind of rules or guidelines in place to protect the cash flow where you're not profit sharing money you haven't collected or truly made yet. So that's what number nine's about. This goes
into, of course, California is a little bit tricky when it comes to when you can take money on the remodeling side of things. So you've got to watch that pretty closely too.
Yeah. Other states, I know Florida's got some rules too about how much you can sign contracts for and I don't know all the rules, but I know every state's different. So you should probably pay attention to that. I think the biggest mistake where how people break rule number nine is not understanding their balance sheet. You know, there are things that your business has that's costing your business money that's not on the P&L, you know, and then you got to think about taxes, right? So there's another thing that needs to go on your threshold. So that's what rule eight and nine are about. I'm going to jump into number 10. This is a rule because people have broken it. It's really simple, but I made it a rule because I think it needs to be something that when people are considering this program, they need to be aware of, is you have to do it. If you're going to announce a profit sharing program to your team, and if you're going to set it up, you need to pay it out. And I have seen business owners do a profit sharing program and their profits go up, and then it comes to pay and they get wet feet, cold feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like you got the reward. Your team earned this. And well, I don't know, man. I'm just worried. What if they don't do it again next month? Or what if it all falls apart? You know, what if there's a downturn in the economy? Well, you're screwed either way, whether you're paid out or not, if these things happen. And you know, that's probably not a good answer, but you know, it's when in the heat of the moment, when I'm talking to them, I'm just like, you announced it. You're the leader. You have integrity. You have to show your team that. Because if you don't do it, all this hard work that you did and all the hard work of building your company and your team is going to be gone in a second. And they won't trust you. They will think you're greedy. They will think that you're in it for yourselves. You don't really care about them. You will just destroy much more than just a profit sharing program. You'll destroy your credibility. You'll destroy, and then your team will be frustrated. They'll talk to customers and it's just all bad, bad, bad news. So the damage it'll do to trust and morale is unrepairable. And it's a big deal. This is why it's a rule. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about your business and you're thinking about profit sharing, study these rules and it will be a huge, great starting point guideline for setting it up, what you want to do.
So we're going to put all these in our show notes as well.
Yep.
And we'll make sure everyone has an opportunity to do those. Now, Rob, this is the part of the show where we hope is a little fun for you. Steve Wheeler is going to ask you some questions that we did not feed to you.
Okay.
Not heard these before, but hopefully it'll be a good thing. So Steve, right, take it away.
All right, Rob. So favorite book, fiction or nonfiction?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. By Dale Carnegie.
Fantastic. If you could have lunch with any famous business person currently or in history, who would it be?
I would love to pick Elon Musk's brain for an hour. I just think, I don't know if I would learn anything that would help me, but I think it's just how that guy clicks and ticks and thinks is got to be a fascinating conversation.
That might blend right into it. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Jeez. I think flying would be really cool. Like if I could just walk outside and take off like the Rocketeer. Do you remember that movie?
Yes. Oh,
yeah. And he put the bubble gum on the hole in his fuel tank and he would just fly around everywhere. Like I watched that movie 100 times as a kid. That would be cool. I think that would be a sweet superpower.
That was a good one. If you could have one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Got to be Mexican food. Tacos, super burritos, sopes, all. I mean, I love all that.
And how about your favorite vacation spot?
Bass Lake, California. I feel like my soul heals when I'm there.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's great. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you being on the show with us all. Where can we get in touch with you if we want to learn more about profit sharing or your car washes or whatever you got going on? How can we reach out?
Well, all my businesses have websites. You can Google those names and I'm sure you can find it. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. You can connect with me there under Rob Gallagher. The book is out on Amazon. I think we're going to put a link to that on the book. We're currently putting together a very extensive course to teach business owners how to do profit sharing. I am extremely motivated by the benefits of a profit sharing plan in my life. And it hurts me to see these business owners. I love business owners and it hurts me to see them go through some of the struggles and live the lifestyle that they think they need to be successful. And I think there's a better way. And I would love to help other business owners reach this life that I have. I'm spending time with my kids. I have a great marriage because I spend time on it and I'm intentional about it because not every ounce of energy in my life is spent on the business. So that's going to be out in July and there'll be a website for profit sharing where you'll connect with other business owners that are profit sharing. We'll have a community. You can ask questions. I'll be on there and that's how you'll be able to connect.
That's great, Rob. We really do appreciate you being on the show. I think this is a great opportunity for other businesses. And like so many people in our industry, you're giving so much back and it's something that is, you know, super cool. So
yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you guys.
So Steve, what did you think?
I owned a remodeling company in Delaware here for 12 years before I came to RA. And I remember the very first question that came to me, like the first question that was like, I really can't figure this out, was how do I get my employees to care and try as much as I do, you know, to just care the way I do about the product, about the clients, about everything. And, you know, this is certainly an answer to that. And I really, I think so many people think that way overall in terms of culture, accountability in organizations. And this is certainly, you know, an answer to that question. It's a great opportunity to not only, you know, change the culture and change the lives of your employees and, you know, increase the performance of a company, but, you know, similar to this model and, you know, Built to Sell by John Warlow with the 8 key drivers of company value. These are things that if you do them, you know, the 3 rules he had of, you know, the KPIs, knowing your accurate accounting, leadership, these are things that are going to make your company better anyway. You know, these are things that you need to be doing anyway. And then once you have them in place, this offshoot of profit sharing is an incredible added bonus to this and really can catapult and get you to that crazy land that I talk about called the next level. So, yeah,
never heard you talk about that.
So yeah, I think this is fantastic. I really enjoyed, you know, the 10 rules and everything that has to do with this process here, profit sharing.
The one thing I just want to reiterate, and I think this is, again, the most generous thing he can do besides the money is this, you know, financial wellness. So many folks, we see it all the time with our companies and that we work with. There are folks that are really struggling that just don't, on a personal level, just don't get how to spend money or how to save money or how to make money beyond your 40-hour a week job that you're doing. And I just think the fact that that is something that's part of his company culture is remarkable. And I wish more companies would do that.
Yeah. I think a good follow-up could be, why is there a boat on your balance sheet? That's the follow-up book, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure there's not one on Rob's balance sheet. Not that I've seen it, but I've seen odd things on balance sheets as well.
Yes. kitchen and bath companies with bobcats, you name it. Well,
Yes.
this has been awesome.
It absolutely has been. Steve, great to be on with you again. It's been a little while, so looking forward to our next episode as well. And thank you for listening to the Why We Build podcast.
That's it for this episode of the Why We Build podcast. We hope you found something valuable to take back to your team. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Please send in your ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. If you want more information about our roundtables program, production manager groups, design manager groups, consulting services, or any of the Remodelers Advantage offerings, please visit remodelersadvantage.com or email Greg at remodelersadvantage.com.